Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchisepreneur who owns one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. We have a great show this morning. We're meeting with Dr. Scott Shane, author of Born Entrepreneurs, Born Leaders. And this is the first book to review the entire range of scientific literature on genetic effects on organizational behavior and explain in a practitioner-friendly manner how your DNA affects your workplace behavior. And that's coming up in segment two of Franchise Interviews. So stick around because we got a great show.
Are you one of those special people who are willing to go after your dreams and goals? Are you ready to fulfill that dream of owning your own business with the security of a proven brand? The opportunity to take control of your future and own a Rita's Italian Ice franchise is within your reach.
Rita's is seeking success-oriented individuals who are ready to make a change in their life, and Rita's offers unparalleled training and support to assure your success. And did you know the frozen treat industry is a recession-proof industry, and there are Rita's in 23 states currently with 540 stores open. Rita's Italian Ice has been around for 25 years and is listed as a top-performing franchise by the Wall Street Journal.
Now here's the really good part. Rita's Italian Ice is a unique and amazing taste treat. It's smoother than a snow cone, and it combines ice with real fresh fruit. The real fruit adds dramatically to the taste, and it comes in over 40 flavors. The ice and fruit are mixed on site and made fresh daily, and it is delicious.
You'll want to know more about this exciting and successful franchise opportunity. Go to www.ownaritas.com and get all your questions answered. That's www.ownaritas.com to take control of your dreams and future today. You don't want to wait any longer to be a part of this adventure. www.ownaritas.com.
Who's helping build America one small business at a time? Franchise Inc., a free consulting service.
For years, Franchise Inc., a national company, has been helping people franchise their business concept and help folks like you own a franchise.
With over 2,500 franchise systems out there, it can be awfully confusing. Don't take chances with your future. At Franchise Inc., we've done the homework for you. We can help match your interests and background with the franchise that's right for you. And we only work with proven franchise systems with a solid reputation and track record of success.
The consultants at Franchise Inc. can help you with your short and long-term wealth strategy.
Give us a call today and we'll send you free our best-selling book, Solving the Puzzle of Owning a Franchise.
Remember, it's not just owning a franchise, but finding the right one for you. Call us at 800-961-0420 for a quick consultation to discuss what's important to you, your business, and your future.
The service is free. The book is free. What do you have to lose? Find the business that's right for you.
Call Franchise Inc. at 800-961-0420. That's Franchise Inc. at 800-961-0420.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchisepreneur who owns one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. How you doing today, Don? Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Yeah, same to you, Marty. I know this is a big day for you.
It's a special
day.
Yeah. Special day for the McDermott clan. Yeah, corned beef and cabbage tonight, you know. So.
Yeah, same with us.
Yeah, it's a fun day, and it's a nice day here in Pennsylvania as well, you know, so...
The sun's out. It's a nice day. The sky's blue. It's
absolutely. Can't complain today.
That's right.
Our last show, Don, we met with Bob Hoffmeister, president and COO of Margarita's Mexican Restaurant. And Margarita's has been tagged the home of the world's best margarita. We tried stealing the secret recipe, but Bob wouldn't give it to us on the show.
Yeah.
But just great concept. Again, a new franchise opportunity. I thought he did a great job. What were your thoughts on last week?
Yeah, I was definitely impressed. I mean, any type of, especially the newer restaurant concept franchise, I mean, you got to make sure you're doing everything right. For example, they are moving forward with adding new franchisees as area development agreements, having to at least start up a few units. I think that's a good idea.
Right, and that's for our listeners, too. I mean, they and Bob mentioned this on the show. I mean, they did have to have, you know, deep pockets, you know, to get into this opportunity, and that makes a lot of sense. Again, we're talking about, you know, a nice Mexican restaurant. So,
and I also like how they do conversions. That's going to be their strategy. A lot of existing restaurants, why go through the whole build-out phase? Maybe there's some existing you know, mom-and-pop Mexican-type places that might want to convert to this franchise. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I thought that was a great idea as well. You notice, too, I one of the things I picked up on, Donnie, was mentioning about the low turnover rate at the company. You know, and to me, what that suggested is that there's a strong culture at Margarita's Mexican Restaurant. You know, I mean, if people aren't leaving, that says something, you know, and I think that's the type of business, too, where I don't say it's a revolving door, but, you know, you're constantly, it seems like, hiring and firing in that business, you know, the restaurant business. I know you were involved, you know, in food for some time, so you've probably seen a high turnover rate. So I think that's one thing that it indicates. They waited a long time, too, to franchise. You know, I mean, a lot of times we say, you know, yes, they are a new franchise opportunity, but they've been around a while, though, haven't they? I mean, they're not, they just didn't start doing this yesterday.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good point. I mean
that's,
we always like when, you know, there's no big rush, no big rush to sign a bunch of new franchisees or get people. Have to make sure it's the right fit. And, you know, it's one big team.
Right.
And, you know, so it'll be interesting to see where they're at in a couple of years.
Yeah, it sounds like they could have started franchising, you know, listening to Bob, probably about maybe 5-10 years ago. But, again, they waited. You know, they wanted to have that, you know, great strong system. I like, too, that they also disclose their financials in the franchise disclosure document. You know, not everybody does that. In fact, I think it's a pretty small percentage, isn't it? I think it's maybe only about 25% do that. So I think that says a lot, too. So I said your accountant types, when they look at the financial model, that might catch their interest as well. But I think you needed, not to say you needed restaurant experience, but I think they were hoping that you'd have, you know, some type of background.
You gave a good
well.
Answer when we asked about the characteristics, what they're looking for, ambitious people, likable people.
Right.
And by the way, he was calling from Portland, Maine. I don't know if we've had too many interviews, people from
I think he's the
Maine.
First, yeah. I was a little envious that he's up in Portland, Maine, you know, because I know it's beautiful up there, you know. Absolutely. So that's fantastic. So he did a great job. You know, we'll follow their success, you know, and we'll have them back on the show next year with, you know, perhaps one of their first franchisees and, you know, talk about their experiences as well. It's always fun to invite a franchise back a year or two later, you know, and just watch the growth of a franchise. It was amazing. You were talking last week about Jamie Brinkus, you know, and Slim and Fit, and we had those guys on the show. We had Jamie on the show six months ago.
Right.
You know, and it's great to see that he's selling franchises now, isn't it? You know, I don't know how many he's up to at this point, but that's just a wonderful feeling, you know, to see that, you know, and say, wow, these guys started on our show, you know, and they're doing really well.
We should you know, touch base with some former shows. We know we want to have a bomb. Maybe send an email to them and just give us an update on how things have been since they've been on the show.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's been a couple of years. And give us just a I think that would be pretty interesting to
yeah, we have so much material. I mean, God, we could do the show another 10 years if you have it in you, you know, to just go back, you know, on a lot of the concepts that have been on our show, you know, to go back a year or two later and say, how are you guys doing now, you know? And I followed some of them, you know, and I could see the growth, and that's just, that's a wonderful thing to see that, you know. So it really is amazing. So what do we got going on today, Don? Today's a pretty big show, isn't it?
Dr. Scott Shane, author of Born Entrepreneurs, Born Leaders. It's really the interesting. It's the first book on this subject.
It is. The first book on this subject. I think we've mentioned it, you know, because, you know, I go back and listen to past shows. I think Dr. Shane wrote a blog on this topic, and you and I were talking about it on the show, and it's just a fascinating topic. I don't know if you remember, we had Dr. Shane on the show, it was about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. We were talking about his book, Illusions of Entrepreneurship, which is an incredible book. But he kind of hinted that I think he was interested in this topic, you know. So it's amazing to see, you know, a year and a half, 2 years later, you know, he came out with the book on it. So that's just, it's wonderful. And he wrote it in a basic manner, I think, so most people could understand it, you know. You know, he does a lot of journal writing as well, you know. So sometimes the average person reading it might get a little confused, but...
well, thank God he did write it like that, because this is not easy stuff to understand in general. Talking
in
about
general, it's
makeup,
it's true.
DNA,
it's deep.
You know.
It's a deep topic. Just so you know, for next week we're meeting with Paul Mann from Fetch Pet Care. I think you're familiar with those guys, aren't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Heard of them before? It says, work with the ones you love, the pets. Fetch Pet Care offers pet franchise opportunities with thriving future that gives you incredible freedom and a career that offers long-term growth and also income potential. Again, I imagine you have to like pets to go into that type of opportunity. You know, I'm sure Paul will confirm that for us, and there's a lot of people out there, you know, that like that. And then the following week, right before taxes are due, April 15th, we have Ronnie Deutsch, Tax Centers, with Franchise Interviews, and she's a pretty big deal, you know, from what I've heard, you know, and a great speaker as well. So looking forward to having Ronnie on the show. And week after that, I think we have a senior care franchise. We haven't had one of those on the show for a while. So
great.
We got a pretty full schedule going on. We'll probably be booked into summer in the next couple weeks. So
yeah, got some good shows coming up. Excited to continue the archive of shows as we get up to what, close to 175, I guess, is our next target.
Yeah, well, right now I think we're up to about, this would be about our 165th show. I'll have to double check on that. But isn't that incredible? I mean, just, you know, heading towards that 3.5 year mark, before you know it, we'll be doing the 4 year anniversary show. We're already talking about that and, you know, who's going to be on that show, because it's always a special 2 hour edition. And
right.
It's just amazing. The year just goes by so fast, Don, you know, as we were saying earlier before the show. It's just, there's never enough time, is there?
Yeah, it really does.
And to top things off, you were up late last night scanning the globe, looking for articles. Appreciate your dedication.
And somehow landed in the state of Tennessee.
You know, there you go.
It's an article through the Tennessean, Franchisees Fight for Startup Cash by Wendy Lee. Want to open your own fast food restaurant as a franchisee? Which is interesting. We just, you know, with having margaritas on last week.
Right.
It says, be prepared. It may be tough to get a loan, even as the idea of acting as one's own boss gains favor among the working class as layoffs and uncertain job market linger. People lose their jobs and then have a sour taste in their mouth about working for someone else, says Corey Bowman, Vice President Franchise Development for Pita Pit, a fast food company with a restaurant in the local area. The concept of franchising has been very appealing because it's an opportunity for them to become their own boss, to control their own destiny, he says. The catch is that it may be difficult to secure capital to start a business. Subject we're all, like, really sick of talking about.
But because it's just so important, though, because that's where everything seems to end, doesn't it? You know, I mean, you have all these people going to franchise shows. They're listening to our show. They're working with franchise brokers. They go through the whole process, and then they hit this obstacle at the end, which is where, you know, guys like yourself come in and you help these people the best you can. But wow, it's really it's made a dent in the franchise community, hasn't it? It is always the topic of conversation, whether you're at a franchise symposium or a franchise show, wherever it may be. It always seems like it's the topic of the day.
Goes on, Marty, ex-commercial real estate developer Roger Cathy recently signed on as a franchisee, opening his first location of Bojangles' famous chicken and biscuits. But finding money to pay the chain's $25,000 franchise fee per unit, among other costs, was a challenge. He said he initially had funding, then wasn't able to get it, then was finally able to come through last year with some funding. He says it was quite a shock to us, who runs a fast food franchise with his wife. at frozen yogurt chain Tasty Delight, at least six would-be owners anxious to open U.S. locations are waiting loans, says Nikki Sells, VP of Franchise Development. I'm familiar with her and the company, very nice, fast-growing franchise.
Right.
The initial franchise range for them could go between 240 and 440. Just like every business out there, the economy slowed down our growth. This is, you know, I guess as we are heading into 2010, I guess we're still dealing with some of the issues from the last year and a half. Things are still rough, although there's a lot of, you know, good opportunities, like we've talked about, Marty, with leasing space, and if you do get a loan, the rate is low, and, you know, with suppliers and vendors, still there's, you know, some challenges.
Is there a way to explain in English what's going on, Don? I mean, in the franchise community, when you come to the franchise loan process, I mean, why it's just been so difficult?
I think lenders, you know, started getting so many defaults in their loan portfolio, and then the economy started getting worse, and then they were looking at how the next 6 to 12 months going to be. And you know, just, you know, then I guess the banks themselves had to, you know, cut down on their staffs. You had less people to do the loans. It was just really a whole domino effect. You know, then you have less lenders in the industry.
Right.
And then you have lenders, as long as they're going to do loans, they might as well do the loans that are safer and less risky, like loans with real estate. Or existing franchisees who are already successful and can show profit on their financials,
yeah,
and they're looking to either refinance or expand. And of course, they like doing the real estate loan. So the smaller startup loan, that's become the toughest one to do. The you know, $100,000 to $300,000 startup loan of a new franchise became something very difficult to do. You know, lenders make less money on those loans.
Right.
And they're riskier, and with the defaults they're having, it just you know, that's what the whole situation created, and you know, we're, you know, they're still trying to dig out of it. It's still not easy. We're, as you know, at Diamond Financial, we're still getting startup loans done, but we have to pre-qualify more. You know, lenders want to do different types of loans and startup loans, and that's sad because this is where it hurts the franchisor. It hurts their growth. And, of course, they want to use their existing franchisees to add units and grow. But you want to get some new people into the system.
Right. You want to get some new people into the system as well. You know, and that changes, too. I mean, you know, when your franchisees, and they become multi-unit franchisees sometimes, you know, I guess that becomes more challenging for them as well. You know, it's a topic that I want to discuss in the future, going from single-unit to multi-unit franchise. Forgot to mention that to you as well. But yeah, I mean, you're right. You were talking earlier about there are some tremendous opportunities out there, and it's a shame that the lenders don't recognize that. You know, I mean, we've seen from articles that you've referenced on segment one talking about like landlords giving these killer lease deals, like sometimes 6 months free or the first year free. A lot of them are more willing to do that with a franchise opportunity because, again, that franchise also has a track record of success. So when, you know, Subway comes in to a landlord, I mean, typically, you know, you look at Subway success rates, you know, and I'm sure there are some that fail, of course, but, you know, for the most part, they do very well. You know, and that's why a lot of those deals are being made, you know, and some of the franchisors, you know, especially if they believe in the franchisee, you've mentioned they've waived the franchise fee, you know, which is typically was about $30,000-$40,000 in some cases. So
now with financing, that's specifically SBA. I mean, what? I mean, you're right. There's other ways to build your franchise system and add new franchisees by waiving franchise fees or you know, doing something with royalty. But there's other financing ways, and we're going to have this show coming up soon, a specialty finance show.
Yeah, we need to do
looking
that.
Looking at other ways, to finance. There's people can use their retirement money. There's there's equipment leasing. There's unsecured credit lines. There's a program to find local partners and investors. You know, the more people are starting up franchises, maybe by, you know, taking on a partner or working with family and things like that. So we'll go over all the different ways, different ideas for someone to get into business and buy a franchise if you can't go the straight traditional route of just getting a business or SBA loan.
Yeah, we really need to be having our own symposiums too. That would be pretty cool to have that on our show, you know, to have like a symposium or something like that, like a round table session, you know, of just all these, you know, guys like yourself, you know, who talk about this topic. Dr. John P. Hayes, who we had on our 3-year anniversary show, he, I don't know if the book is out yet. I'm going to have to take a look. Help Your Banker Say Yes, How to Get a Loan Open for Your Franchise. And he came up with some creative ways as far as, you know, getting financing. So I'd like to have him back on the show as well, especially when we talk about that topic. You know,
yeah, very interesting guy. He's very knowledgeable.
you can speak to hours with him on the topic of franchising. He just really is so knowledgeable. You know, so
now this article, Marty, goes on at Bojangles said they're seeing less expensive real estate deals due to the recession, and they're bullish about expansion. Real estate costs have declined 15% or more on average, and construction costs are down at least 17%. Says the VP, Eric Newman. We are seeing significantly better deals. The real estate bubble created its own problem in the industry. It was really daunting. And they're, you know, sales at Bojangles are climbing. So, you know, it's not all negative doom and gloom. There are a lot of franchisors doing well, and their franchisees are expanding. I guess they're planning on opening 15 to 20 new locations, you know, coming up.
Wow, so that's good. I mean, so we do see the growth, you know. I mean, again, there are some positive signs out there. It does seem like there's a light at the end of this tunnel, you know.
Right.
I think you and I probably thought we might be out of it a little sooner, you know, than later. But, again, I guess, you know, time will tell the answer. But it is great to see, though, how these franchisors, I think, a lot of them have used their creativity. And what that's done is it's created competition among all the other franchisers, you know, because a lot of them notice, you know, Bojangles has competitors and, you know, Margarita's Mexican restaurant has competitors. You know, they say, well, wait a minute, these guys are giving like a 2-for-1 deal or they're waiving the franchise fee. Maybe we should be doing the same thing, you know. So it seems like the, I don't want to say the consumer, but the prospective franchisee is the guy that's benefiting and, you know, it's going to create more jobs out there.
Yeah. Great point.
So, you know, I guess we'll just have to keep our eye on that and, you know, certainly hope for the best, you know. But I see our guest, Dr. Shane, has called in, Don. So why don't we do this? We'll take a quick break, and then we'll bring Dr. Scott in, and we'll be right back with more franchise interviews.
Need a business loan? Talk to Diamond Financial Services, the experts in franchise financing nationwide. Whether you're looking to start a franchise, acquire an existing franchise, or expand your territory through opening new locations, Diamond Financial stands by your side start to finish. From pre-qualification to packaging and presenting your application to securing a financial commitment and through the loan closing process, Diamond Financial is there. While you're waiting, thousands of others are making their financial dreams come true. Don't wait any longer. Pre-qualify now by completing a confidential, no-obligation financial analysis. Let's face it, traditional banks just aren't in the business of financing small business. At Diamond Financial, we specialize in securing franchise loans from $100,000 to $3 million and equipment leasing up to $150,000. Let us help you get started. Go to www.franchisefunding.net or call 877-508-2274. That's franchisefunding.net, 877-508-2274. Franchise Interviews. For over 2 years now, Franchise Interviews has been giving you an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship.
Through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews, as well as get tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising.
And our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, experts, and attorneys.
And our free franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise.
And don't forget to listen to our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919.
That's 610-905-2919.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchipreneur who owns one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. And as we were saying earlier, Don, we have a great show today. We're meeting with Dr. Scott Shane, author of Born Entrepreneurs, Born Leaders. And this is the first book to review the entire range of scientific literature on genetic effects on organizational behavior and explain in a practitioner-friendly manner how your DNA affects your workplace behavior. Hi, Dr. Shane. How are you today? Welcome to the show.
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Shane. Dr. Shane, joining us is my co-host, Don Johnson, and I know, Don, you wanted to say good morning to Dr. Shane.
Dr. Shane, it's great to have you back on. We appreciate it. You're really keeping yourself busy lately, huh?
Yeah, I am. Well, that's my job.
Well, it's funny, Dr. Shane. I don't know if you remember, I know you do so many of these interviews. When we had you on the show, I guess it was about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, Don, we were talking about Illusions of Entrepreneurship, which was an incredible book. You kind of hinted that you were interested in this topic, you know, so it was great to see that you did come out with a book, you know, on the subject. Why did you write the book, Born Entrepreneurs, Born Leaders?
Well, it's actually something that I have been working on for several years now. So at the time that I spoke to you before, I was actually doing research on the topic. And I don't know, about 5 years ago, I got interested in whether there's truth to the kind of statement that people make all the time that, you know, certain people are just born entrepreneurs. And there's actually several different scientific methods that you can actually answer that question to see whether there is an innate component to being an entrepreneur and entrepreneurial performance and aspects of entrepreneurship like identifying opportunities. And I've started using those methods in doing my research. And then I thought, well, you know, there's a lot of interest amongst practitioners in this general topic. They're the ones who are often using these terms all the time. And in looking at it, I just realized that a broader book than just entrepreneurship would be necessary because there's issues related to leadership and job satisfaction and financial risk-taking and even the choice of occupations in general. So I thought, well, a broader book, but that looked at the genetic components to workplace behavior would be good.
Absolutely. And how was writing this book a different experience for you, you know, Dr. Shane, from like Illusions of Entrepreneurship or Fool's Gold? Is it the similar process or a little different, because I know you don't have a background in genetics, which I guess doesn't make a difference, but...
Well, so some part of it was actually different and some part was similar. I mean, anytime you write a book that's based on kind of scholarly evidence, there's reading of that literature. The two big differences here were that in the other books, a very large portion of what I was writing was about my own research.
Right.
And here, a small portion of one chapter, the chapter on entrepreneurship, was about studies that I did with my colleagues. And the rest was just summarizing what other people had done. The other difference is that some of the research that needs to get reviewed is truly molecular genetics work, where people are trying to associate versions of specific genes with outcomes whether people are engaging in leadership or financial risk-taking or what have you. And that's just a little bit harder to work through because I had to move myself up the learning curve in understanding that research.
That's That's interesting. And what do you think people are so fascinated with this topic? We Don actually read one of your blogs on our show. I guess, Don, it was probably about like 6 months ago.
Right.
And you and I were both fascinated in the topic. But why are people so interested in this topic, Dr. Jean, you think?
Well, I think one part of the reason that people are interested is that people intuitively believe that some part of what we do in our jobs and everything else in life is innate. So scientists work hard at kind of trying to document this and keep people from overstating the case. But the intuition is that everything is not environmentally determined. That there's some innate component to everything.
Right.
And so people are quite interested in that. I think that's one part of it. I think a second part of it that makes people interested is that it kind of suggests that down the road we're going to get better at training and incentives for people, because much like people have developed personalized medicine where people have a version of a disease with mm-hmm. certain genetic makeup, they're given certain drugs and not
right.
others, there's this idea down in the future that maybe that would happen for other activities as well, that, you know, this kind of person, the way we train them to be a leader is different than this other person. And I think intuitively a lot of people say, you know, I went to business school or I went to college and, you know, everybody's treated exactly the same way, as if, you know, we just got this information and then we would all magically become entrepreneurs or leaders
right.
or what have you. And I think intuitively people are just skeptical that people can be treated the same way and get the same outcomes from it.
Yeah, and that's what I got when I was reading the book. I remember chapter 7, Donna, you were talking about Leona, who was a girl, I guess, studying leadership, and she was always fascinated in the topic and wasn't very, I guess, successful as a leader. And then her friend, I think it was Susan, people just followed her. So I guess that's like one example of that type of situation.
Right, and I mean, people sort of, this is intuitive to people, right, that everybody knows somebody that really, really wants to be a leader
right.
and just can't, no matter
exactly.
what. It just seems that they're unsuccessful. And then there's other people who seem to be just naturally followed. And what is it about them? Is it really their life experiences that made them so different? And the
right.
part that makes that kind of difficult is that we start seeing some of these patterns, you know, in little kids. And, you know, you say, okay, well, you know, there's always some learning, but how much of, you know, a four-year-old following other four-year-olds
right.
and one four-year-old leading other four-year-olds, how much of that do we really think is the environment shaping them, right? You know,
right.
they've only had 4 years and they haven't had, you know, work environment experiences and these other things. Now, sure, how their family raised them and even experiences when you're two or three have an effect, but what people realize is, yeah, but probably there's something else.
Right.
And it's that something else that we want to know about.
Yeah, it is interesting, especially when you have kids, you see how it changes your life. I know you went through this, Don. You know, my son, Dr. Shane, he's 2 years old, and we could see he's kind of like a little follower, you know, in interacting with the other kids. He's not the leader of the group, you know, and you wonder, you know, is that just inborn, you know, as your book talks about innate, you know. So it is a fascinating topic, that's for sure.
And it's also interesting timing, Dr. Shane, with what's going on with our country, so many people out of work, and, you know, so many people being entrepreneurial and, you know, looking to start up their own business. We have a new generation of people being business owners, and I guess this will be good. People might want to learn a little bit more about themselves and if they
mm-hmm.
are the right type to be creative or be entrepreneurial and aggressive and start up a business. Possibly talk a little bit more about genetics and what you mean by genetics for, you know, people listening to, you know, clearly understand it.
Right, and you know, I just, it's a good time to say that right now, because having said, you know, what you said before, I don't want people to be left with the idea that any of this is kind of deterministic, because it's
right.
not.
Right.
What we're talking about is, you know, tendencies and probabilities. So, you know, just because there's some force that makes someone a little bit more likely to be a leader doesn't guarantee they're a leader and vice versa, but it's like capital, right? We know that people who have more net worth are more likely to start businesses because they can more easily self-finance, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't guarantee it. It just affects the odds, and it's a similar thing here as well. But what we mean when we talk about genetic factors is all the things that are innate to people that come essentially from their genetic makeup, and that could operate lots of different ways, right? We could have differences in how people are genetically coded and how that affects the neurotransmitters, the brain chemicals that operate to stimulate people. And a good example of this is dopamine receptors, and dopamine is the sort of the feel-good chemical in the brain.
Right.
And we know that some people's brains release more or less of the chemical. And, you know, one of the questions is, okay, well, how might that affect behavior? And there's some evidence to suggest that, you know, some people who are less prone to releasing the dopamine or having the dopamine in their brains, they need more stimulation to do it. And so they might
Right.
be more likely to seek more novelty in new situations and those kinds of experiences. And that's where we observe actually in some of the data that we've looked at that, in fact, some people are innately more likely to seek new situations and seek novelty, and that those are people more likely to start businesses. Now, starting businesses isn't the only thing they're going to do. You know, some people might go into extreme sports or something
Right.
else in response, but there's that biological effect. Then there's this other effect that essentially you get people who become more likely to have certain kinds of personalities or cognitive abilities, and that leads them down certain roads, right? If I am innately better at mathematics early on, that might take me down the road to being more likely to study math, and if that's the case, the odds of me becoming, you know, an actuary later in life are much higher than if I'm, you know, not heading down a mathematics road and I'm heading down a literature road. And you know, then we know that there's interactions between the genetic makeup of people and the situations that they're in. So we've got some evidence on leadership that shows that people who are innately predisposed to be leaders, they have a genetic makeup. If those people have to overcome some kind of obstacle in their teenage years, some sort of bad thing that happened to their family, like the parent lost a job or they lost a parent or something like that, it's that interaction of being innately predisposed and the stimulus of having to overcome an obstacle that makes them more likely to adopt the leadership role. So we get all these different mechanisms all coming together to affect the tendency, but what they have all in common is some portion of the outcome is coming from innate differences.
So some people are more comfortable, when I was reading the book, Dr. Shane, in putting their money into like a high-risk business. I was thinking, you know, I was going to tell you before the show, Don, that this might apply to even franchising, because I guess, you know, the people that are investing into, and I know you wrote a book on this topic too as well, Dr. Shane, people investing in a franchise might invest in a franchise because they aren't, I guess their level of risk or risk-taking isn't as high, maybe because of something genetically within them. If they have, they're investing in a business that has a track record of success, I guess you can apply it to the world of franchising as well, couldn't you?
Well, right. So part of what we don't have is that we don't have a lot of evidence that would show the specific examples
right.
here. And, you know, it's interesting because, I, you know, I talk to, you know, folks that do radio show on angel investing, and you know
uh-huh.
they say, well, you know, how does this apply there? It's the same thing. It probably
yeah.
applies to everything,
right?
But we don't have the evidence that would say here's the example in the case of franchising. But what we do know is that there's an innate component to how much financial risk people are willing to take. And there's some very interesting studies where people, you know, look at identical and fraternal twins,
mm,
and
yeah.
that's a good example because the identical twins share 100% of their genes and the fraternal twins share half, and that's
right.
how people can measure these genetic effects. And you see, okay, people go to some kind of money manager and they're asked to fill out a questionnaire about how they'd like their money allocated, and the evidence is there's a genetic component to how they fill out that questionnaire. And other people in Sweden, when they privatized the social security system, they actually linked that up to data about twins and found that actually whether people were choosing their social security to be in stocks or bonds was affected by their genetic makeup. And people have also even found versions of specific genes that are associated with that. So we know that risk-taking, which is probably kind of a basic aspect of human beings, you know, throughout our entire history, is there. Well, that probably manifests itself not just in physical risks, but in taking financial risks. And if franchising is a type of financial risk-taking, then one would expect it to matter there as well. I don't have any evidence to show that, but, you know, there's no reason to say, well, you know, picking stocks and bonds, the innate component to risk-taking is there, but it wouldn't be to purchasing a business. That doesn't seem logical.
Wow, it's fascinating.
And Dr. Shane, I mean, do you feel that people fear discussing genetics or maybe finding out information about themselves that might be different than what they thought they were? I mean, maybe talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's two big issues. One part of it is that people say, well, I don't really want to know about these things because I might not be able to do anything about it. And, you know, part of that is that that's the sort of initial first reaction. But one of the things that we realize is that there's probably actually down the road a bunch of things that will happen, that if people can do this kind of research and understand these things, they'll figure out what the link is between the stimulus that people need and their innate predispositions to get outcomes. And we all would like to have kind of an ability to have the things that we do make for, desirable outcomes. So if we say, well, look, you know, I really want to be a leader, but it
right.
seems like all these leadership training courses that I'm taking aren't doing anything. Well, why is that, right? And we don't have the answer today, but we might 10 years down the road be able to say, well, see, this kind of person, they're more likely to respond to this kind of training or information. So part of it is that people, their initial reaction is, I don't think I'm going to get anything out of knowing this. The second reaction is, this is informational really at this point, but it's not an action plan, right? We don't know enough information to say that. You know, I've written books on other topics where we can say, look, we really know a lot about how you would, say, design a franchise system so
right.
that a person can read the book and take it out today and do that. This isn't that kind of book. It's not going to tell you that. And then the third part is that people have a negative reaction that it'll just be used, the information will just be used badly. It'll be used for bad purposes. My reaction to that kind of view always is, well, you know, just because you think something could be used for a bad outcome doesn't mean you want to ignore it, because most likely the only people who are going to pay attention to something are the people who are going to have ill motives if everybody else is afraid to look at it. And even if all you want to do is regulate something, you should understand the patterns. I mean, if you use the analogy of insider trading, we wouldn't want to say, oh, insider trading is bad, let's not look at it at all. And the only people who pay any attention to it are those who wanted to take advantage of it. We might want to say, oh, it's really bad, we need to understand how it happens, and take action. So even if you think that these genetic effects are bad, you might want to know about them. So you could say, okay, well, we need to make sure they don't influence, we don't let people use them in the workplace.
Right. That's interesting. What would you say to people that want to be great leaders, Dr. Shane, or an entrepreneur, and let's say they haven't been successful? What do you say to those people? Like Leona was the one that came to mind. I referenced her earlier on. You mentioned her in Chapter 7 of the book. What advice would you give her if she's just been unsuccessful in leadership and she still wants to be a great leader? As you said, she went to all the training, she's read all the books, and she just – is there anything she can do?
Right. So here's the difficult situation. The answer is there's always something you can do,
mm-hmm.
right? That all of this stuff is probabilistic, but part of it is what you want to do is give people a mental framework that doesn't say, I'm going to fix your problem, right? One of the things that actually business school professors do, I think that is unfortunate, is we kind of give an overinflated sense of how incentives and training and all this are going to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do it, it's going to work.
Right.
You want to be a leader, boom, we'll train you and be a leader. And what you realize is, no, it might not work for everyone because there are aspects of them that we can't tap and change, and we don't know how to do that yet. So if there is something about certain people's innate predispositions that we need to train them a little bit differently to be leaders, then they might experience a lot of kinds of training that we haven't figured out the right stimulus yet, and they're going to be unsuccessful. And the point is, you know, not to give up. I know that this isn't really the ideal answer, because what it's saying is kind of the sales job that people get of do this and your problems
right.
will go away. What this is saying is it's not so simple. And the problem is that's not always the most appealing answer. It's not so simple. It's complicated. You need to keep working on it. We need to still try to figure it out. We don't have all the answers yet. Not 100% appealing, but I think it's the reality.
Wow. This is fascinating. And do you want to talk a little bit about management? I know in the book you spoke about a number of different topics, Dr. Gene. How about management style and how genes affect management style?
Right, so this is probably actually one of the areas that is probably the most interesting for people who are interested in franchising, because we know that franchising is a kind of business ownership that's different than other kinds of business ownership, that you will have to be part of a system, and so there are more rules about how you do what you're doing. And there's a lot of aspects of management behavior that have a genetic component, whether people, you know, are willing to break rules, whether they're very planning oriented, whether they're highly persistent, whether they're intuitive decision makers or not, whether they're risk taking. And you know, one of the things is that if people have a predisposition to be kind of a certain way, they are going to find it easier to be in situations that reinforce that, harder to be in situations that don't. Now, not all that comes from genetics, but in fact, what it's saying is that some people, innately, their style of managing might fit certain jobs and certain kinds of business startup situations better than others. It literally makes them feel more comfortable.
That is interesting. And do you think there's like tests that one should take, Dr. Shane, before, like, let's say, getting into a particular franchise opportunity? I know, Don, you've read some articles in the past about taking like personality tests, and some franchisors won't take you unless you pass this particular personality
right.
test. Did you have any thoughts on that, Dr. Shane, as far as like what kind of tests there are available and are they accurate?
So part of this is always tricky, because it's not that there's zero merit to these tests.
Mm-hmm.
There's some merit. The problem is that there's not a huge amount of predictive power of the test. But because we know that a big chunk of personality comes from innate forces, then, you know, what in essence people are saying is, look, I'm giving you this personality test because I'm looking for somebody who's a certain type to buy my franchise. And I know that some part of that is just how they were born. And I'm in essence making a selection. Now, the problem is that when you take all the factors into consideration, it's not strong enough to say, oh, well, the person with a certain personality would never be any good at being a franchisee. It's just about probabilities. Now, if say somebody with a certain personality is, you know, 5% less likely to be a good franchisee for a particular organization, and so somebody applies that test, does it mean that they couldn't do it? No, but it means that if you've got somebody who's picking 10,000 franchisees, 5% is enough of a people for them to say, you know what, it's worth me doing this selection because I can avoid a few people who wouldn't fit.
Yeah.
That's interesting, Dr. Shane. I when I first got the book, what I always do, I look through the different chapters. I immediately went to Chapter 9, Born Entrepreneurs, How Your Genes Affect Your Tendency to Start Companies, because I've started a few companies. I've been in business 20 years. And for people listening, because this is not, easy stuff to understand, but you did a great job in putting it in simple format so people could understand. But you say here, your genes influence the odds that you will become an entrepreneur. The statement is true whether entrepreneurship means being self-employed, owning and operating a business, founding a company, or participating in the business startup process. So I like how you clearly state that your genes, like you've mentioned before, the tendencies and probabilities, I guess you have a greater chance if your genes have that type of makeup and your odds are better that you can be successful. I guess that's what really you've really concluded with, some of this, work that you've done, right?
Right. Now, part of this is that the way that we've come up with that evidence is by looking at identical and fraternal twins. And so basically, if there's a genetic component to something, identical twins should be more likely to both do it than the fraternal twins. And that's where you can find the effect. The catch to all of this is there could be, say, 500 different genes operating each with a tiny effect. And since people have all different combinations of those genes, it's not as if you're saying this person is going to be less likely to do so because they're missing, X. It's more like, no, altogether, you add up all these effects and you see the patterns, right? Now, again, this is useful for people trying to understand what's going on. I'm not sure at this point that people can turn that into something that's necessarily, completely proactive, because you might say, okay, well, I'm more likely to be an entrepreneur because of kind of how I was born. But I could still do it anyway. It will tell us that one set of people are more likely than others, but at the individual level, we don't have enough information yet to say, okay, well, the odds are too much not in my favor because of how I was born to do it. And we probably won't ever find anything that's so powerful as to say, nobody should do it because the odds are so much against them. It's going to be a little more likely. It's the same way as saying, to go back to the financing example, if you have more money, your odds of being able to start a business are greater. It doesn't mean that we should say to a person who has zero net worth, don't ever consider starting a business, right? It just means, you should probably be aware that, your odds are a little lower being able to pull this off.
Dr. Singh, this question I just thought up, would you rather have a great genetic makeup for, starting up a business or being an entrepreneur, but maybe have average work ethic and passion for what you do, or maybe a little lower genetic makeup with great passion and work ethic?
Well, that's an almost impossible question to answer, because the passion and work ethic is partially a result of your genetic makeup and partially a result of your environmental experience.
As well, okay.
Right.
So,
all of these things are having, these effects. Where I think that this is going and where it would be useful in the future is if you say, okay, look, this person is innately kind of predisposed to be very passionate, but they're also innately predisposed to be really disorganized, and this other person is the opposite. What's the best kind of way to get them to be, each of them to be effective at starting businesses? Somewhere in the future, we'll probably be able to say, look, the passionate person who's disorganized, you need to do these kinds of things to help them become an entrepreneur. And the person who's not very passionate and highly organized, you need to do a different set of things. So I don't think it's going to be so much this set of people will be better or this set of people will be worse. that down, you know, 10, 20 years down the road we're going to be able to use this for, it's going to be saying, no, look, what's the best way to match? What's the best way to take advantage of who people are to make them able to have the work outcomes that they'd like to have?
Wow. And how far away, you think, are we from all this, Dr. Shane? I mean, 10 years, 20 years, I mean, are scientists actually researching this topic in addition right now?
Yeah, so people are doing it. I mean, one of the things that's happened over the past decade is that there's been a very big increase in the amount of work that uses the genetics to try to go outside of things like medicine and go into things like work-related behavior. Now, it's still tiny by the standards of the total number of people working in on medical outcomes, but it's attracting interest, and people are starting to figure out that this matters. There's also these parallel paths that aren't about genetics, but other aspects of biology. There's a whole trend in what people call neuroeconomics and neuromarketing, where people are studying how people literally react to things. So if I gave you an example of, you know, an advertisement, right? You know, you have an advertisement, you want people to buy stuff. Well, one of the things that these neuromarketing people have figured out is that different kinds of ads stimulate different parts of the brain, whether it's the kind of rational portion or the emotional portion, and you kind of want to, depending on what you're trying to do, you might want to trigger certain parts of the brain. And so what we realize is that there's a biological portion to these reactions that we need to understand, and that, you know, 20 years, 30 years down the road, I don't know how long it's going to be, we're going to probably see more of an understanding that there is a link between people's biology and things that happen in the work world.
And what's next for you, Dr. Shane? Are you going to continue studying this topic? I mean, you could see your passion for it.
Yeah, so I think that probably for a long time, this will be the focus of the kind of research that I'm doing. You know, part of it is that now that we're moving into doing work with molecular geneticists, we're literally trying to find, are there specific genes associated with things like recognizing business opportunities. You know, that's it's a step-by-step process of small steps that take a long time. So, you know, I would say that probably for the at least the next decade, that's what it's going to be the focus of my attention.
That's terrific. And how could our listeners get more information on you, Dr. Shane, and getting the book? Can they go to Amazon.com, or is there a website they should go to?
Yeah, so for the book, the best thing to do is to go to Amazon.com and look up Born Entrepreneurs, Born Leaders. Finding me, Googling Scott Shane at Case Western Reserve University usually pulls up all kinds of stuff about me.
That's great. We'll put a link up for our listeners as well so they can have easy access to that information. And I want to thank you again, Dr. Shane. You're an incredible guest, and we'd love to have you back each year and talk about what you're doing.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Dr. Shane.
Thanks, Dr. Shane.
Great Bye-bye. Show, huh, Don?
Yeah, very interesting, and that's what we provide to the country, Marty. Interesting shows and topics, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. this was different, you know. But it is an incredible book, though. You know, I mean, it's just it was great to see that he did go forward with it. You know, just from talking about it 2 years ago. You know, and I haven't seen too many books out there on this topic. As you said, it's the first, you know, so
it'll make people learn something about themselves, which maybe will help them in their decision on what they want to do with their career. That's what I think is interesting, and also it'll interesting to see how companies maybe start using this type of information in hiring people, or whether to take on new franchisees or whatever.
Well, I think that's why he's going to continue to do it, you know, because there's just more to learn about this whole topic, you know, about genetics and things like that. So
right.
It really is a fascinating topic. It's got me thinking. So, well, great job today, Don. For our listeners, go to franchiseinterviews.com, go to franchisefunding.net, gofranchise.com, and next week Fetch Care, isn't it, Don?
Yes.
And I'll talk to you next week, Don. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.